Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery. And today I'm going to do a little rant at Emily Yaffe from Slate. I know, it's going to be very exciting. So actually, a couple people who are friends of the show, Johnny and Paul, shout out to them, made sure that I saw this article. So Slate's regular Dear Prudence advice columnist wrote a thing today called The Best Rape Prevention, Tell College Women to Stop Getting So Wasted. Okay. Whew. All right, so choices of where to start with this. First of all, I mean, we could focus on Emily herself. Any advice columnist, anybody who's in that position is going to eventually make mistakes. And I mean, it's a perilous job to have in the first place to be advising people because so much of that is incredibly subjective and based on your own experience, your own values. And these things are going to dramatically differ depending on what your life priorities are. So it's really hard. I mean, I've had the same situation. I don't know what your priorities are, so it's harder for me to advise you if I don't know what's important to you. But then again, that's what I usually say to people. It's like, I don't know what you want, so what do you want? You figure out what you want, and then we can talk about how do you do that. But that's not the way she rolls. Emily Yaffe has historically made some pretty big errors. She has, here's a perfect example. These are just randomly, I Googled, like, Emily Yaffe's worst advice. So in one case, a woman admitted to her that she had not been on birth control and intentionally got pregnant despite telling her boyfriend that she was on birth control. And she was thinking about telling him now, years later, and admitting what she had done. And what Emily Yaffe said is, no, take it to your grave because, you know, it might, you know, it might go back to change the way he looks at the little girl, and it's just, you know, what are you going to do about it now, and you're not a monster, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to call this woman a monster, but I'm still going to say that, like, a lie that you continue to tell every day is not somehow better than if you just come clean and then, like, pull off that scab and then give somebody the option to make decisions based on real information and not fake stuff. So the fact that you did the wrong thing in the beginning does not excuse you're continuing to lie every day because of it, because it might cause disruptions in your kid's life. It might cause disruptions in your kid's life, and that's terrible for your kid. That does not, however, make it okay for you to continue every single day lying to both the kid and the dude, all right? So this is just an example of Emily Yaffe's bad advice. I also have, continuing my Google search, she also was lecturing someone who wrote in about, I'm about to get married, my fiance and I don't plan on having kids, and people keep asking us about it, how do we ask them to stop, or how do we deal with this? And Prudence, rather than being like, oh, that is annoying, here's a cute way to tell them to mind their business, because it's really nobody else's deal whether or not you have kids, it's up to you, you're a grown-ass adult, instead she's like, oh, you might change your mind, and you know, like, this is a quote, as close as you may be to your nieces and nephews, that's no substitute for having your own, which is, like, adorably fucking condescending. Thanks, Emily Yaffe, for knowing better than I do about what I should do with my life. But I guess it's a thing with being an advice columnist. She also has, here's another one somebody complained about. A dude found a bunch of mementos from his wife's affairs, and he threw them out. And now he's in trouble for having done that. So Emily I'm not even sure what was going on here. She was sort of feeling siding with the wife on this one because he shouldn't have done it. And yeah, maybe he shouldn't be shucking out other people's stuff. That's true. But how about the fact that those are affairs? Like, this does not seem to be getting addressed properly. Anyway, okay, so that's not really the point about whether Emily Yaffe is a good person or not. It certainly is relevant to whether Emily Yaffe should be taken seriously as a source of advice, however. So that can be taken as a point of reference there. So anyway, she has this article, College Women Stop Getting Drunk. It's closely associated with sexual assault, and yet we're reluctant to tell women to stop doing it, is the point of the article. So her whole deal, much as a billion-dee, thousand-dee, million-dee, billion-dee people have written before, advising young women not to get drunk. And her thesis is based on the fact that among American college-age women who are particularly susceptible to sexual assault, there is a very high correlation between alcohol use and sexual assault. Now, there are a couple major research methods type errors to this association. First of all, correlation and causality. We know this one. Just because two things are associated does not mean that they are caused. However, one might be an excuse for another, and that's definitely a thing that has happened. People will use drunkenness as an explanation for a thing that they did that is bad, whether you're drunk or not. There's also the fact that this is American college-age students. This is not applicable to everybody. Rape happens to a lot of people aside from college-age women. And when it does, we can't always blame it on drunkenness because they're usually sober in prison. Rape that happens in other countries is not necessarily associated with alcohol consumption. That's an American thing more than it is an international thing, because rape is not really about drunkenness. Drunkenness is the way in which it manifests in our culture in many cases, but not all of it, because people aren't always drunk when they rape, and people are not always drunk when they get raped, right? So again, correlation causality is a little bit of a problem. And so if you can't prove that the one causes the other, it's a really good idea to not victim blame in the case. Just in case you're wrong, especially, you don't want to be putting the onus on the survivors rather than the assailants. She does go over the top, making sure that she clarifies that rape is the responsibility of the rapist, that ultimately this is an act perpetuated by one person on another, and it is not the victim's fault. She does make that point, but she is still, at the end of the day, writing this to women and writing about what women can be doing to change the likelihood of them getting assaulted. Which brings me to my larger point, which is why there's been a billion-dee, thousand-dee, million-dee articles like this before, and they are not doing anything. What Emily Yaffe is doing, what a lot of rape prevention throughout history has done, is frame the whole thing wrongly, is to think about rape prevention as a woman's responsibility. Like all of those lists that are, you know, things to do when you're walking down the street in case of an assailant, and like all of those things that are, you know, telling women to use the buddy system and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's not that those things are bad, not that that advice is bad, but why are there not an equal number, if not more, number of those articles that say, don't rape people? If you start to get drunk, it makes it harder for you to tell if somebody is able to consent, if they're also drunk. How about you don't put drugs in people's drinks? How about if a stranger says, no, go away, that you then leave them alone? How about if you know somebody has been drinking, you stop trying to fuck them? How about stuff like that? There are not as many articles about that. And when those articles are written, they are usually just sort of like categorized as like this feminist thing. And it's feminists that are doing all this work blaming men and putting it on all men rapists, la-da-da-da-da. Which in reality, no, because there need to be more articles addressing how you should have enthusiastic motherfucking consent before you have any sexual relationships with people. And that enthusiastic fucking consent includes that they are able to consent legally, that they are old enough, that they are aware of the consequences, and that they are not throwing up right now out of drunkenness, or are just, you know, too loopy to you know, take the SATs right now. There needs to be more conversations like that. So I understand wanting to advise women. It comes from the same place where we want to have self-defense courses for women. I understand it. It's coming from a place of protection. It's coming from a place of, I have daughters, I have sisters, I want to look out for them. It's not ill-conceived. I do not get mad at people for wanting to protect women from sexual assault. That's a totally reasonable desire. What is unreasonable, however, is that this conversation can happen over and over and over again. We can have these education interventions over and over again without talking about rape culture. There are still people who believe who doesn't
exist. There are still people that don't know what that term means. And that's okay. You don't have to know what the term means to understand what rape culture is. But rape culture is the assumption that somebody probably did something to cause it, the assumption that you need to put the onus on the survivor to prove what happened. And frankly, the idea that it's okay to, you know, talk harassingly to women when they walk down the street, that it's okay to grab at them as they walk through a crowded space. I mean, these are things that just women deal with on a daily basis that men really may not understand. Because it, you know, even if in your attempts to empathize, you might be like, well, I wouldn't mind it. That's great. You know, I wouldn't mind it if somebody told me I had to go run a mile, but that doesn't mean that's for everybody. And the whole point is, don't be a dick and make people do things that they don't want to do just because you want them to. Find out if they also want to. And if they also want to, awesome, you can do that thing together. And that's what makes it awesome and not crappy. And that's what makes you a good person and not a shitty person. So we need to just discuss everything from that perspective, where it's about consent and not everybody wants the same things. And so how about you ask them first? So writing these articles is not, it's not bad because we want to infantilize women and act like they're not capable of taking care of themselves, and that they shouldn't be responsible for their actions. It's not about that, because drinking isn't a smart decision for anybody, really. It's not good for your body. You're more likely to just like lose your shit, you know, like, where's my phone? You're more likely to forget things that you did. You're more likely to say things that you really later think probably you shouldn't have. It makes you a bad driver. Drinking is not good for anyone. But this article wasn't the best rape prevention, tell college men to stop getting so wasted. It was not directed at men, and that article does not happen as often. And when it does, again, it gets put into this little box of a feminist thing, because only feminists are putting the responsibility on men to prevent sexual assault. And this is all sort of still, again, beside the point. Because rape is not just a thing that happens at drunken frat parties. And that's not only unfair to the frat boys who've never assaulted anybody and are totally respectful to people, because they exist. I've been to frat parties with perfectly nice men who were totally respectful and were civically engaged, and they actually joined for all the reasons that you would hope someone would join. And it's not just a problem that happens to young women. It's not just a problem that happens to pretty women. It's not just a problem that happens to drunk people. Rape is a thing that happens to men and to women and to children and to old people. And we're finding more and more evidence that men are raped more often than women are. But the challenge is getting them to come forward, because sexual assaults are grossly underreported because there's so much stigma, there's so much shame. And if you know that the first thing that people are going to say when you report it is, well, what did you do? Then you're even less likely to want to come forward about it. I mean, it's so ridiculous. One of the things that I keep trying to draw a parallel to is, what other crime do we blame the victim for nearly as much? I mean, is there anything that comes close? Like, if you're walking down the street and somebody robs you, is the first question, you know, well, maybe you shouldn't have been wearing such nice clothes? Or if someone breaks into your house and steals your stuff, is the first question, well, maybe you shouldn't have had such a nice house, or maybe you shouldn't have lived in that neighborhood? Is that, I mean, if that's the first answer, if that's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear about somebody being victimized, that makes you a jackass. That's what that is. Then it makes you a terrible person. Because crime does happen, and it's horrible, and nobody wants it. But the responsible thing to do is to go after who did it and to look at the motivations for why they did it and how we can prevent that. Not blaming people because they didn't, you know, have some sort of bomb shelter down in a basement somewhere that no one could get into, so that you're 100% safe from everything. Because being alive means taking risk. Walking across a street is risky. And you're going to take calculated risks based on what you want to get out of life and what risks you're willing to take. So rather than blaming people for taking risks that you didn't want to take, how about we just hold people responsible for doing shitty things? Because they should know better. Because they also grew up in this culture, and they should know that stealing's bad as much as they should know that rape is bad. And really, ultimately, who is getting sexually assaulted is more about vulnerability, access, and convenience for people who want to sexually assault. When asked in a survey. We tend to survey college age people because they're easy samples for psychologists. When asked in a survey, a variety of things that are not the words, have you ever raped somebody, but have you ever, you know, forced someone to have sex when you knew that they didn't want to, or have you ever made someone have sex because you had bought them dinner, or you phrase it in a different way like that, coercion, you know, those sort of things, and not using the buzzword of rape or sexual assault, we find more and more men admit to it. And we also find that there is a very disturbing number of people who answer the question yes when asked, if you knew you could get away with it, would you force a woman to have sex? Or even if they use the term, would you rape a woman? It's a disturbing number. Somewhere around a third of college-age men agreed to this, that they would, in fact, if they knew they could get away with it, they would rape a woman. On an international scale, we find studies done in Asia where a distressing number of men, a third to a quarter, admit to regularly sexually assaulting women for reasons including they felt like it, entertainment, it was a punitive thing, all sorts of stuff like that. Not because they was drunk, because they fucking wanted to. And that is rape culture. That is just the whole problem, is that somebody wanting to get off on power decides to take advantage of somebody else. And that is the thing we need to address, not whether or not a woman is allowed to get fucking drunk. And no, it's not like, yeah, women should get drunk all the time. That's obviously not what I'm saying. The reality is that the people are raped because someone thinks they can get away with it. Why do sex workers get sexually assaulted more often? Is it because being a sex worker is immoral and that's their punishment? Well, some people might say that. But in reality, it's because their job is underground and it's illegal. And if it happens, they can't really go to the police about it. They're easy to get a loan, and retaliation for it, unless they have a pimp, is not very likely. That's why. That's realistically why. So rather than placing the blame on the sex worker for having gone into that field, which is a natural reaction of people who don't want to think very much, think about, why is it that somebody would rape a sex worker who's obviously willing to have sex with you for money, you stupid jerk? So thinking about it from that way. So this whole thing, again, to just summarize, the problem is not wanting to protect women from sexual assault, or protect men, or young people, or adults, or the elderly, or should we point out who is very, very heavily sexually assaulted per capita? The physically and mentally disabled caretakers are disturbingly likely to sexually assault people who are in their care. Not that all caretakers do it, but that people who are physically challenged and mentally challenged, especially both, are very, very susceptible to assault. So rather than telling them to stop being who they are, how about we focus on not letting rapey people get those jobs? Maybe paying better so more people will want to go into those fields who are good folks and not because they're like stuck there. Or I don't know how to address that problem. I don't know that much about that particular thing, so I'm not going to act like I do. But again, reframing this to be like any other crime, let's focus on the motivation for it and the person who did it, not the person at whom it was aimed. So this is obviously much bigger than Emily Yaffe, and her advice is, it's hit or miss. I don't know. I think I disagree with her probably 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 anyway. But I don't really know how you get that job. There's not a particular school they go to. I think you just know the editor, and then you get a job. But the point of the story is, this article is not bad in the way that a lot of people assume that I think that it's bad, because they're immediately like, why wouldn't you want to have practical advice for real-world consequences? That's not the problem. The problem is not practical advice, because this is somewhat practical. You could possibly reduce the likelihood of getting sexually assaulted by never ever drinking, by never ever going into a city, by never leaving your house. You could reduce the likelihood of getting sexually assaulted by never interacting with a male or any other person at all. These are all things that really could practically reduce your risk. But all of those things are wrong because they focus on the woman as though she is implicitly the one who is determining whether sexual assault happens or not. That she and her choices determine whether or not this happens to her. And in the most extreme form of it, we have people who say things like, you know, you go out there and you are uncovered and you can see your arms and legs, and then what do you expect is going to happen? Because that's just like throwing meat out in the street, and of course cats are going to eat it, which is super, super condescending to men also, not helpful. But ultimately, you know, if somebody gets sexually assaulted who's been sober their entire lives, that just disproves this in many ways, that you can't prevent rape by focusing on the possible victims. And the point is you have to focus on preventing it from the perpetrator angle. That's the only angle that's really going to work. And as long as there are as many articles aimed at perpetrators, then there's nothing wrong with putting out extra advice to ladies to help them look out for themselves. But that's not what's happening. It's not that there's 50-50. It's still a preponderance of aiming at women. And that is what is problematic about it, because that's not ultimately addressing what causes rape. So, as always, I want to hear your thoughts on the matter, so you can definitely hit me up on Facebook, sexwithtimory@gmail, tweet at me, whatever. Thanks for listening. Have a good day. Hey, Sex with Timory fans. I want to hang out with you, and you should come hang out with me. And two upcoming opportunities for us to hang out and talk about sexy things are at Kink Shop in Old City, Philadelphia. You should totally come join me. Two of the upcoming dates are October 19th for negotiating with your partner. So that's going to be about anything that is useful that you would want to talk about with a partner, whether it be little or big, complicated, simple, whatever. It'll be a lot of fun. Be kind of ridiculous, actually. And then November 16th, we have troubleshooting your sex life. So in any way that your personal sex life is not matching up to your ideal, let's do some work on that. We'll figure it out. Let's make the two become the same thing. So again, negotiating with your partner, October 19th, troubleshooting your sex life, November 16th. You can get your tickets ahead of time from Kink Shop in Philadelphia on Brown Paper Tickets. There's also Facebook events forums, so you can also message me if you have questions on those things. So I hope to see you, Kink Shop, Philadelphia. I will see you. Let's hang out. Bye. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.